bow to silence under the black circle.
Hello, hello. Welcome to Call Me Negotiator, an East meets West conversation show. Explore how people navigate difference across cultures, industries, and everyday life. I'm your host, Charlotte. I studied law in China, later negotiation at Columbia University in New York, and I'm currently researching AI-assisted negotiation and human communication at Ivy's Lab at SFU in Vancouver, Canada. Having lived across multiple regions and traveled to over 70 countries, for me, cross-cultural conversation and negotiation are lived experience. On this show, we speak with creators, entrepreneurs, and investors, building their journeys from zero to one, sharing the lessons and decisions behind what they create. And today, we continue that exploration with a very special guest. His name is Ahmed, A-H-M-A-D, and J-A-D-A-L-L-A-H. an engineer and creator behind Creativ, a multilingual no-code platform that makes it possible for anyone to build commercial quality games, animations, and simulations. His journey started with a love for games, but also the frustration of how hard real creation lived. That led to one key insight. The real barrier isn't talent, it's access. Today, we will explore his story, the rise of global no-code creation, the building of Creativ, and the real lessons of entrepreneurship and negotiation. So let's start from the beginning. Amit, from Creativ, what were you building or exploring?
Sure. So, you know, video games as an industry right now is a gigantic one. You're talking about something that is more than the, like, movies, music, and TV industry combined.
Right.
And so it's about $300 billion industry per year as of 2026. And yet the barrier to entry to this industry is still very high, despite all of the recent advancements in technology.
Mm.
And because of this, like, we're not getting enough stories and enough original content from all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
It's mostly concentrated in Europe and North America, and that's why we're planning to kind of, you know, change that landscape, hopefully with a disruptive solution that is Creativ.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much. So the first part, we want to talk about your story, right? Like, early relationship with games, emotional impact of Creativ barriers, and the shift from player to builder. So I just want to ask, before Creativ, what have you spent most of your career building or exploring?
Sure. So I've been in video games from a very young age, as in, the earliest memory that I have is, you know, playing the Atari 2600 with games, and then later on DOS with games such as Prince of Persia, which was developed by fellow Canadian Jordan Mechner on DOS. And that's what kind of, you know, sparked in me kind of the love for games that were trying to be movies.
Mm.
So they would use the best of technologies at their time, and their our minds would fill in the gaps and make them look like these Hollywood blockbusters.
Right.
So some games focus on the twitch responding and how fast you are, how accurate you are. I prefer the kind of games that are focused on storytelling. So that's basically where it started.
So storytelling, I got it. Yeah, but do you remember the first moment you thought, like, I want to make a game myself, and what happened at that time?
Sure. So that was exactly Prince of Persia, and basically, you know, in order to develop something like that, so the first question you would ask is, if I'm able to run the application, is there a way to actually make one? And the answer came over time. So
right.
I grew up in Saudi Arabia, actually, and at the time there wasn't kind of traditional game industry like it is right now, and so you had to wear multiple hats and be a generalist. So you try to do a little bit of the art, a little bit of coding, and then try to kind of, you know, figure how to bring everything together. And so in order to do that, you'd use something like a game engine, or at the time it was a programming language, something called QBasic. So you just write code and see the result on the screen. And with constant iteration, you would start to figure out how to, you know, connect the dots and make something that is coherent. It so happened that I was lucky enough, my dad is a mechanical engineer, so he brought with him a desktop PC, so a 386 PC at the time, from work, and I got to use that as an excuse to both play games, but also to work on CAD applications, so AutoCAD and 3D Studio and these kind of things. And yeah, over time, started to build knowledge both in the software itself, in the English language, in accordance with the Arabic language that I was learning all at the same time. So that helped in that regard.
I see. When did you, like, when you struggled the most back then, what did you misunderstand about the real problem?
So the combination of all of the different tools that were available, along with the capabilities of hardware at the time. So, for example, you know, again, one of the earliest memories that I have is also watching things like, you know, Mickey Mouse cartoon on a VHS tape. At the end of the VHS tape, there would usually be a making-of segment where Walt Disney himself would be explaining how they're doing the frame-by-frame analysis, the hand-drawn aspect of their keyframing animation for Mickey Mouse. And then I tried to kind of apply that same concept to the computer software, to the tools.
Right.
The issue is getting to render the frames separately would take a lot of time. So we're talking about, you know, 12 to 24 hours for a single frame to get, like, a, say, a sphere moving from point A to point B.
Right.
And so you spend an extreme amount of time getting the frames rendered and then figuring out how to play them together.
Mm.
So that was a constraint that would be, you know, totally against iteration. So if every time you want to try something, you're going to be punished with such a painful process, then you're going to be, you know, refraining from experimenting and trying new things.
Right.
So that was a constraint that, you know, I faced early on in my career. Yeah.
Yeah, got it. It's basically like the accessibility for people to try and to build something, and it's
exactly.
just so difficult, right? Exactly. Yeah. I mean, like, looking back now, what do you wish you had understand early at this stage?
So I would say at that particular time, the tools that I were using were not really the best tools for that particular job. So that would be like, you know, using a kind of a chainsaw for a brain surgery. So something very broad for something very specific. And that was, you know, wasn't kind of, you know, the best tooling available for the task. But that was the only thing that was available to me as you know, in terms as a software that I can try.
Right.
So the specialized game engines weren't popular back then. So you would either write your own game engine for your own particular need, or you would have to go look for, you know, something like a game like Doom, for example, used its own engine, and then you try to license that or maybe make mods or maps for that. So there weren't kind of, you know, popular engines such as Unity or Unreal as they are today. And so trying to kind of, you know, choose the right tools from early on would have been, you know, if they were available, would have been kind of massive boost in productivity.
I see. Yes. As the rise of high-quality 3D games and emerging creator movements, including strong inspiration among young creators in China as our Chinese audiences are tuning in while our live streaming, and how no-code expands the participation. So I wonder, when did you think shift from how do I make a game to why is it hard to so many people?
Sure. So the problem is not just about making a game. We're talking about making something that is commercially viable, that you can sell and, you know, convince others to buy it so that you can make more in the future and expand.
Right.
You know, you mentioned China. With China, we had a recent success story and a major inspiration in the form of Black Myth Wukong.
Yeah.
So Game Science worked on this game. It was their first, and my understanding, China's first ever AAA game targeting consoles and PC. And so that was a major success story. We've seen how the financial success, how it kind of, you know, brought investments to the studio to expand on their next offering. So, and to tell a story based on the Chinese mythology and Chinese culture. So I used to work at AWS at Amazon, and a lot of my, you know, team members come from Chinese backgrounds or are Chinese. And so they would tell me that this is something that was taught in school, like the Black Myth, the Journey to the East, and
right.
the Black Myth Wukong mythology. And so to see it in game form, that meant a lot for them. And that sense of pride, that's exactly the kind of thing that I think we can get a lot more, you know, storytelling happening all over the world. You know, there are a lot of interesting stories in the Middle East and Africa and Asia that are yet to be told on the screen and in game form. And hopefully, with creative, we're trying to bring that to the masses.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely understand how Black Myth Wukong create this huge impact to the industry, especially in China. They almost shift people's opinion towards to gaming, because we used to think, oh, gaming is bad, and a lot of student or young teenagers are just completely distracted by playing too much game from the orthodox pathway. However, now we understand this is actually the new industry that's very promising, and a lot of people got inspired and they do want to make the game. However, like, for example, me, I don't code, and it sounds like so hard for me to from wanting to make a game to actually be able to make it. So you create a platform, creative. Could you explain to us like how your work can help people like me and other Chinese creators or other young creators can make their dream come true to tell their stories?
Sure. So with creative, the idea is that obviously like the spelling itself is C-R-E-A-D-E-V. So right. It's like a creative developer mixed into one. The reason why I started kind of building that, you know, in different companies, in different universities, you'd always find the people who are more into science and then the ones who are into art. And games is a perfect mix of both worlds. So, but you're also having the issue, like, you know, when you have artists who are not familiar or comfortable coding, and then you have coders who can't really create, appealing art style. Usually the traditional path would have been just, you know, try to find somebody from the other side and work together, make mistakes, make a lot of them. Hopefully you don't run out of budget. And then eventually, after a few years or months, or depending on the scale of your project, you would release it. But what if we can get everybody on the same level playing field?
Right.
How can we get an author who can do neither to actually make a game that is of what we call triple I or double A production? So triple I, like usually in the game industry, we have like this indie category that started as, you know, one person from their bedroom trying to build a game and then putting it out to the world. So that's the scale. And the other end of the spectrum, you have the huge triple A titles, the Call of Duties of the world, and these kind of games. These would be, you know, cost millions of dollars, tens of millions, maybe hundreds of millions, and spend and the development cycle would run through multiple years of development cycle to get a single game out. So in the middle, we have this double A and triple I segment. So it's something kind of in between. The issue is because it's still expensive and it's still time consuming, it's a shrinking segment in the market today. And yet it's the one that has the most interesting ideas, in my opinion, like from what I've seen and played throughout my career.
Right.
And so the point of creative is to allow you to make high quality commercial titles that would fall into that categories, but then not just stop at games, but also allow animations as well as simulations. So if you want to imagine you're creating a set, a scene on an island. That could be a playground for a video game. It could be for a movie scene, or it could be like, you know, an exploration. Let's say there's an historical ancient ruin site on the island. Can we get the player to walk and learn about the place's history without the context of a traditional video game? So for all these three cases, that's why we're building creative. And it's no code because you know, when you introduce code to the mix, that means somebody can make mistakes. Those mistakes will cause bugs. Those bugs might crash the devices that you're running on. And in the end, like, code will change over time. Now there's vibe coding. My dad used to use COBOL. I use QBasic. My son is using Python. So code will change over time. What will not change is programming. The mentality that you're telling the computer or the device, there is a set of instructions that it needs to follow to get a result. And that's why in creative, while you don't write code, you as a director get to tell it what to do. So for example, imagine like when the player goes into this particular location, let's play a music track, an action music track, and then spawn zombies in this particular location and make them walk to a certain location at a certain point so that they're facing you. So now you've told it what to do. It's up to the app to figure out how to do it. In the end, you get the end result, and then you can tweak it over time. But to clarify, creative is not an AI platform. So you still do things manually. Right. It's just that it automates the tedious polish that you would expect to see in a high-quality video game. For example, if there's water and you walk through the water, you expect to see ripples. At a certain point, you expect the player to swim. The island would have intense wind that you can control. So all of these things are there, and they are controllable. That's the whole point of it.
I see. So sounds like creative is more of like helping people to tell story but from big picture. However, they do help to solve the bug problem, focusing on, adjust or correct the details. Am I understanding
exactly?
It correct?
So game development is about like two main things. There are the broad details. Like in general, my game, let's say it's a first person shooter or a third person character driven action game. And then you need the different levels that you're going to be progressing through. So those are the large kind of scale details.
Right.
But then there are the small scale details, that the stuff that differentiates a game made by a team of hobbyists from one that is made by a team of professionals. For example, on characters, players expect to see blood and sweat and dirt on the characters to give them that real life kind of, you know, look and feel.
Right.
That takes a lot of time and experience to get right. Mm. Creative automates that on your behalf. So what you do is you tell it that, you know, this character needs to be weathered and as if it just, you know, came out of a battle. And then that will reflect on the character itself and its appearance.
Right. So what I understand is that making a game, it has a lot of kind of like capabilities. It's just like a movie director. Mm. You are not just required to know how to film it from what angle, but you also need to learn how to tell stories and how to put different fragments into different places. However, the smallest detail for people who work for the director or film director, right? We don't have a team, but mm-hmm. creative is something that we can use it or see it as our staff, our team to help us to tell the whole story in the gaming industry.
Exactly. And, you know, in most of the making of segments that you find at the end of movies or video games, you would usually find like the director talking to a team of engineers or technical artists, telling them how they imagine the shot would be.
Mm.
But what if the director himself is able to, or herself is able to kind of get what they have in their mind on the screen right away without having to translate that to somebody else? That's where creative allows them to do it. And if you're able to, and the whole interface is done through simple sliders and toggles. So you're not kind of fiddling around with the UI and UX. You're getting the results that you want quickly.
Mm.
And one key thing about the game production process that usually you need content. So for example, if you're making a game about, you know, time travel,
right,
you need level one to take place in Asia, level two in Europe, level three in Africa, in different time periods in those locations.
Right.
You would usually need to build the Lego pieces or the set pieces that would be associated with each of them. Like the Asian style buildings will be different than the African ones, than the Europeans. And then the weapons and the clothing and the fonts and the music will be very unique to each of them.
Mm.
This is where the majority of the budget would go through. So that's what you spend in terms of, you know, creating all of that content. With creative, we have a concept called theme packs. So
yeah.
So those theme packs are, so you have at the moment, you have like 20 theme packs and growing. You're able to take elements within them and then mix them up to your liking. So you can choose a medieval sword from the medieval pack and then use an Arabian-looking horse, the Arabian horse breed, and then add on top of that an Asian-looking character and then mix all of them together in a single scene.
Mm.
On top of that, you're also able to import your own custom content. So let's say you've made a model or you paid somebody else to do it in 3D Studio Max or Maya, you're able to import that into the scene and then have your own unique set. So the mixture of both of them, like the custom content and the pre-existing stuff, is what makes it very quick and very speedy to show. So if you recall, I showed you like that 1 minute scissor reel about what you can build with creative. That's like a 1 minute scissor reel that has like, you know, 20 shots. Each one of them took about 7 minutes to make.
Mm.
In comparison, it would usually take, you know, 7 weeks to a few months in traditional software packages to get that same result.
Oh, wow. Well, so we understand that creative or platform like creative can help us to solve those kind of technical problem. So I wonder, like, for someone with ideas but hasn't started yet, what else is usually the real thing holding them back?
So so if you think of it from at the end of the day, let's say that you managed to build your game, whatever tool that you used, whether it's creative or the traditional means, you can't just release it tomorrow on the end platforms, on PlayStation or on PC.
Mm.
There is a lengthy process that you have to go through to get approved as a developer, and then to submit and go through technical certification that can take months, depending on the scope of your game. And then there is the actual distribution of your application and the marketing of it. So there is whole business cycle that happens beside the act of actually making the game.
Okay.
With creative, you're able to automate that. So you're able to basically publish to the built-in Discover store inside the app. So let's say you're done with your game today. You just select that you want to publish the game. You fill a form that just, you know, the game is belongs to these categories, is going to be a free or paid game. How much is it going to cost? What's the age rating? And what's the description and features? You submit, and then it becomes instantly available on the Discover store inside Creative itself. And because Creative is going to be available on PC and PlayStation and other platforms, then your game, by definition, is also going to be available there. So you're able to quickly take a URL, send it to somebody anywhere in the world, and they're able to play right away. So that, you know, cuts that process as well.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for Amit's explanation, and we will tune in with some music, and we will come back in a few minutes. Thank you so much for tuning in. And this is CJSF 90.1 FM at Burnaby Mountain. And this is Call Me Negotiator. I am Charlotte. Today we are talking with the gaming master, Amit. He built a platform that allows us to create game or even AAA level games without knowing coding. Amit, could you tell us, if we wanted to use this platform, how can we sign up? How can we use it?
So right now you can log into creadev.net, creadev.net, and sign up for the launch. The launch is expected to happen this summer.